Hey, Barstool listeners, you can find every episode of this show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
It was a great conversation. Just this is actually the first interview that I did when I decided to start the Kevin Clancy Show. And the first guy, I said, listen, I'm trying to do like deep dive conversations with interesting people. And he was the first one. So just a real interesting conversation about the music industry and his come up and using the internet and Spotify and blowing up that way. We talked about his marriage and his relationships and business, you know, his relationship with his parents and friends, all this interesting stuff. He's just like a totally normal cat. He's a guy who would fit in at Barstool. He seems like a guy who would, you know, read our shit and listen to our shit. He could work here. He could be a fan of us. He's as normal as they come. So, you know, he's the perfect age too, right now, wheelhouse of like early 30s when life starts to get real. And that's where I'm at right now. 35, single dad. Got the weight of the world on my shoulders with the kids and Barstool and every franchise I have and an ex-wife and trying to run my own life and everything. And so I did it. I finally took the plunge. I'm taking crazy person pills. It's official. It's official. Finally prescribed some crazy person pills. Got on them antidepressants, which is just crazy to me. It's wild. I know that it's like, you know, probably like everybody you know is on something. I just never thought I would be one of those people. And I guess that's the problem with like the stigma around it. Like, I shouldn't even be saying that. It shouldn't be like, I can't believe I'm one of those people. Like, but it does feel that way where it's just like, wait, what? I got to be on the fucking... on the happy pills? No fucking way. But yeah, that's where I'm at. Very early. I still haven't, all I know is I'm all jittery and I feel fucking weird from taking them, which I guess is something that can happen in the beginning. But the idea behind it, I was like, so I'm talking to my doctor and he's saying like, and Fights kind of called me out for this as well, where like, I don't think I'm depressed. I don't think I have anything wrong with me other than just like, I think there's a difference between being depressed. Like I got some like circuitry in my brain that's wrong versus like, I got shit in my life that upsets me and stresses me. I think those are like two different things, but I don't know, I guess not really. So I'm always kind of like, you know, I'm not depressed. I'm just blah, blah, blah. I'm not depressed, but you know, I feel this way, but I'm not depressed. And so I'm talking to my doctor and he's like, the shit that I'm on, I think it's kind of like Cymbalta or one of those. I don't even fucking know what I'm taking. But he says, if you take it at a high enough dosage, it actually helps with like pain management too, because I have all these fucking issues, my neck and my back and my shoulder from all these surgeries. So he's like, so if you take, you know, a higher dose, you'll get pain relief, but also you're depressed. So I'm like we're talking about like the pain relief aspect of it. And he's like, but also we're putting you on these because you're depressed, dude. And it's like, I don't know if it's the Irish Catholic in me, but I just like refuse to admit it. But you know, it's just wacky to me where it's like life is such a goddamn mess. And I know that mine is probably more messy than the average, but anybody who's been around for like, let's call it 30. I feel like 30 is when things start to get complicated. Because that's when people get married and have families and everything gets real, real. But, you know, you've been around for 30 years, 35, 40 years. It's just a numbers game. At some point, shit's going to get fucked up. That's what I feel. You know, it's like when they talk about, you know, the first person who's going to live to 200 is alive right now or being born right now. I'm like, no fucking thank you. Do you know how much shit you can get in over the course of 200 years? No fucking thanks, man. Like that's my whole thing is, you know, when you're like 10, 12, 15 years old, you know, not only is it like you're living with your parents, you don't have any bills, you don't have any responsibility, your whole life is just playing Little League baseball and riding bikes and like chasing girls. But there's also just not enough time for shit to go wrong yet, you know? And then you become an adult, so you go to college first, then you become an adult, you get a job, then you move out, then you find relationships. And every time you add those things, it's just more of a possibility to get fucked up. And the first relationship you're in, well, now that's the first time that you could be like manipulated and fucked up emotionally. And in my case, it was like, I got old enough, I got fucking injured, I had more surgeries. Then you get married, you have kids, your job, you get fired, you get this, you get dumped, you lose a friend, somebody dies, you get sick. It's just, the more you live, the more shit can go wrong. As I'm saying this, I'm realizing how fucking bleak this is. But I'm like, yeah, I guess it's just time to call a spade. You're fucking crazy, dude. You are a crazy person. I'm so keenly aware and sensitive to the idea of like talking about depression, because in my mind it's kind of like when people talk about like alcoholism, where it's like, you know, like alcoholic, I think that means like you wake up in the morning, you reach over to your bedside table, you grab a bottle of fucking scotch, and you're just like, you know, brushing your teeth with it in the morning. That's like, oh my god, you drink too much. But no, there's levels to this shit, you know. You don't have to go to that extreme to be like, yeah, I drink too much, I got a problem. Whereas same thing with me, it's not like I'm, you know, not going to go jump off a bridge. I'm not crazy suicidal. I'm not like, you know, in like a hole in my room, like can't get out of bed. I do all this shit. I do these shows. I have fun. We laugh. We tell jokes, all that shit. But then I don't know. After all that, I'm fucking kind of crazy. So I guess, you know, shit, 35. I had a good run. 35 years before I had to, you know, get some fucking synthetic shit in my body to try to even me out. Who knows? Maybe I should have been on it earlier. I do. It's one of those things where people are like, oh, everybody's on it. I'm like, are they though? You never really know. I feel like you can't tell because you never get the truth from anybody else. You know, it's almost like, you know, it's like Instagram or social media. It's like, you only see the good side of shit. So you don't, you know, no one's going to offer up all the bad stuff, so you don't know. Maybe they're on it, maybe they're not, though. I'm almost like, are you just telling me that to make me feel a little bit better, or is everybody else on it? Because, you know, I feel like I'm pretty fucking crazy. I feel like the rest of you are not as crazy as I am, you know. I probably should have been on it earlier, to be honest. It's like when you had taken the medicine for your hair, you know, it's like once you lost the hair, it's too late. You got to get ahead of it. Like once you're crazy, you know, there's only so much these pills can do. I really also genuinely believe in the idea that the Irish are impervious to like the mental health. What's the exact quote? I don't even know. From I think Freud said it. The Irish are, it just doesn't work for us. And it's in like The Departed and shit. You know, I just don't think, I don't think it works for us, you know? Freud said the Irish are impervious to psychoanalysis. I think it all is tied in with the Irish, you know, like the same reason we don't get offended, the same reason you can joke about us. You know, we're the only goddamn culture or ethnicity that isn't canceling people when you know, we have the Fighting Irish logo, and it's like, yeah, let's make this leprechaun who's a fucking drunk and violent person that represents the Irish, and we're like, yeah, whatever, dude. You want to make fun of us for being alcoholics, you want to make fun of us for popping out babies, you want to make fun of us for being like red-faced potato famine eating abusers, we're like, whatever, we don't care, it's just a goddamn joke. I think the same reason we don't get offended is the same reason why you can't like fix our brains. I fight with this therapist, not the guys. I got two therapists because, again, I'm fucking crazy. I got the one guy who's helping me out with the pills. I got the other girl who's just trying to get inside this hellscape of a mind. I feel like something in my brain is like, you ever see the movie The Cell? That movie's fucked with Jennifer Lopez and Vince Vaughn. Like, what the fuck are those two doing in a movie? But they, you know, the whole idea is like there's this machine that lets you like get inside, live inside someone's brain. And then Jennifer Lopez goes inside the mind of a killer. And there's this horse. And this fucking guillotine shroom, drops down and slices the horse into like 1,000 pieces. And it's like, I think that's what goes on inside my brain. You know, we just argue every week. And I'm just like, I don't I don't think this is ever going to work. I know you think you're going to have this like breakthrough, and maybe I'm just being some ignorant, you know, stubborn. Nah, couldn't be me, right? Being a stubborn, hard-headed, you know, stick to my guns. Never going to change. No, couldn't possibly be me. But I just like, you know, we could do this every week for like 1,000 years. And I just don't think it's going to work. And we were talking to Paul Bettany on KFC Radio, and he's like 50. And he was like, I've been going to therapy for like 25 years and I don't get the fucking point of it. And again, you know, I think he's like British or Scottish or some mix of all, you know, we're talking, me, Fights, and him are talking like three, you know, Irishmen, Scotsmen, whatever, just being like, it's not going to fucking work. We're just trying to make you laugh. We're just, you know, I'm never being honest in therapy. I'm either lying or just, you know, trying to make you laugh and running material on you, because I don't think any of this shit's going to work, which is probably the most unhealthy approach ever. And that's why I'm hoping that it's just like, hey, maybe I can take these crazy pills and I'll fix everything. But it's wacky to me to think that I'm taking this shit, and that like I look around and it's like, even when I still get so much shit. I get so many haters who are like talking shit about my marriage falling apart. And I'm just like, I can't believe, and the good and the bad, you know, so there's the bad with the marriage, the divorce, and then there's the good with like Barstool and the success. Sometimes I'm like, I just fucking cannot believe that I am here. Cause I was like, so on a path to just live a normal ass life, like not to be special or different, but also to not be like, nothing's wrong. You know, like I had a good family, good parents. My parents were together. I got good siblings. Like, I never realized until like now how easy the biggest thing in the world to me is, like, if you have the ability to recognize in the moment that your life is easy. I don't think we do that very well. I don't think we do that at all. I don't think anybody in the moment ever can say like right now is cake compared to what it's going to be. Cause I think it's only natural. You know, you wake up in the morning and your brain is going to like some things and be happy about some things and going to be upset about some other things. And you're going to have certain stressors in your life. And at the time, those stressors are the worst thing in the world to you. That's why, you know, like when you see like a college kid, I've used this analogy before on a million of my shows. So if you've heard it before, go fuck yourself. But you know, you see like a college kid complaining like, oh my God, like I got finals. And then you see someone who has like a high pressure job out of school being like, you're worried about finals? Like that's what you're going to complain about? Like I've got a fucking business presentation. And then you got someone who has the job and the family and the kids and the bills. And they're like, you're worrying about that little presentation of yours. So your stress and the things that you worry about are all relative. And I think they've done their studies before where like that the brain of the college kid stressing about a little old midterm is firing the same way as the person who's like fighting for their life, you know, with a terminal disease or something like that. Because in that moment, up until then, you've lived such a cushy life. You never experienced anything else that's, you know, harmful or a problem for you. So that is the biggest problem you've ever encountered. So you can say the old, like, oh, there's kids starving in Africa, but it's like, well, up until this point, my experience has been all good except for this one thing. And so in my world, relatively speaking, that's like the worst thing that happened to me. But when I look, so like, I think back to when I was younger and like complaining about some shit, I'm like, oh my fucking God, if I had known where this was all going to go, I would have never taken that for granted. And I actually think I did a good enough job. Like, I think the last time I was truly like relaxed and happy, I don't want to say like the last time I was happy, because there's been a lot of good shit along the way. But the last time I was like, I woke up in the morning and never had that feeling of like, fuck, what am I going to do about this and that? And how am I going to fix this? And how am I going to achieve that? Like back when I was like 25, I would just like wake up in the morning and be like, the worst problem in my life at that point was like the hangover I was fighting. That was it. And after work, there was like nothing to worry about. It was like, I don't know, I'm going to go to the bar or not go to the bar. I'm going to go home and watch TV, or I'm going to go out. I'm going to try to hook up, or I'm going to hang out with the boys. There was just, I mean, there was just nothing to worry about. And I'm trying to think if I guess in that I did live in the moment, because looking back, I never made like a mountain out of a molehill with those things. Like I never stressed. I think I was pretty good about being present and being like, you know what? This is pretty fucking good right now. And what's funny is everybody always talks about like your job and how you achieve your dream job, or how can you work in a job that like fulfills you and doesn't leave you like dreading every day, which I understand totally, because I'm lucky enough that I got out of that corporate life, which would have been dreadful every day, and got into something I like. But that being said, if I were to be truly honest about the last time, like I said, I was relaxed and stress-free and happy, it was when I was working at Deloitte. It was when I was an accountant. It wasn't when I was Barstool. So, because I've always had the idea of like, you got to do one of two things. You either got to find a job that makes you happy, where you don't feel like you're miserable every day going into work. That's pretty hard though. It's very rare. And a lot of times, even if you do achieve that job, work always ends up becoming work, you know? So like, yo, you work in sports and you love baseball. And then, you know, 10 years in, it's like, you start to hate baseball. You start to hate going to the ballpark because work just becomes work. But it is one approach to be like, I'm going to, you know, bust my ass and go down an untraditional route and find that dream job. Or the second route is, like, make sure your life outside of work is fun as shit. Spend your money. You earned it. You know, go on vacations and do fun things and, like, you know, go out after work and don't let the rest of your job consume you. And I think I was option two back then, where I was at Deloitte and it was terrible, but everything else outside of that was fucking gravy. I had, you know, an apartment with my buddies that I loved. We were going to the bars like every night, hooking up, hanging out, you know, single fun, girlfriend fun, all that shit. And that's, and yeah, I mean, for 40, 50, 60 hours a week, I was miserable, but it was always like, yeah, I'm just doing this for the paycheck. And when we get out, we're going to have like a great time, because everything else in my life is cake. And so even, and so then it makes me kind of wonder, it's like, well, what is, you know, where maybe you put too much emphasis on being happy at work, because, all right, I got the job that made me happy at work, but everything else kind of fell apart around it. That's the ultimate to me. The ultimate issue is always going to be that work-life balance, where when I was married, I remember thinking everyone at work thinks that I don't work enough and that I'm like home with my wife and kids too often. And then everyone at home, my wife thinks like, oh, you work too much. And so I'm not keeping either side happy. It was like, I'm failing on both ends. I guess you think like, where do you want to put your emphasis really? Because I don't know. I mean, I put the emphasis into Barstool, obviously. And in a couple of years from now, hopefully everything pays out, cashes out, and, you know, financially it all ends up being worth it. But I think like, well, I got this quote unquote dream job and it almost became stressful having it because there's so much opportunity. I had this thought the other night that I think being a part of like the modern world and having access to so much opportunity is what leads to a lot of stress and potentially unhappiness, which I know seems backwards, but think about it. I think if you have all the access in the world, I think in my case, actually getting this job where like the sky is the limit and life is what you make it and your financial success is what you make it and like the door is wide open, it's almost overwhelming in a way, because, you know, there's nothing stopping you other than you and your own limitations. So like, I'm lucky enough. I say lucky because it does afford me financial opportunities and business opportunities where it's like, I can just make another show and I can start another medium and I can go on another app and like keep it moving. You know, I wrote for a living. I blogged. It went well. was like, let's add a podcast. And that worked. And I was like, let's add this video show. And that, and like, it was, and you just keep adding and adding and adding. It's like, well, when do I fucking stop? Cause all I feel now is like, I got to keep up. I gotta make it, you know, I gotta make the show that much bigger. I gotta get that many more downloads. I gotta start a new video show. Oh, we're pivoting this way. I gotta now succeed over here. Oh, this new thing started. I gotta start that. And it just never stops. Part of me feels like, you know, it's too complex where it's like, if you have a job that you don't necessarily love, but like you just do it and it pays the bills and you don't feel consumed by it because you just like, I clock in, I do my work, I clock the fuck out. That's it. I don't have like this passion for it. I don't have this personal drive for it. I'm just here for the money, just here to make a living. And then I make my life and my happiness, you know, outside of there. Part of me feels like that's pretty fucking sweet. And I know it's the grass is always greener. That's also the problem with what I'm saying about the modern world. When you have so much opportunity at your fingertips, whether it's like business related, where it's like you can get on all these apps, LinkedIn and Clubhouse and all this shit, where it's like you can connect to everyone and find the job openings and find the roles, meet the people, you know, you can do it all. It's like, what's ever going to stop you from continually trying to go? And I know that sounds like a good thing, but you could do a business, you could do it with dating. You know, it's like, all right, now you're on dating apps, right? Where you have access to like the entire world of women or men or, you know, potential matches. And it's like, well, how are you ever going to be like truly satisfied or happy? Because, you know, it's like, well, I can find this person who looks exactly like I want them to look and has the exact same interests and the same likes and dislikes and lives here and fucks like this and this age and this desire. And, you know, it's like it used to be kind of, you know, you're in a town, you settle down that's why they call it settling down. You just kind of settle back then. It's like, you know, I live in this one road town and this girl or guy is pretty enough and they're cool enough. Yeah. Fuck it. Like, it's not going to get any better. So let me settle down, get married, have some kids. Now it's like, why would you do that? Because you have this opportunity, whether it's a dating app or a social media app or whatever, you can connect to everyone in the world. How do you stop with this one person when it's like, well, there's millions more that I can sift through until it's absolutely perfect? And so I start to think that like modern technology gives you too much. There's too much potential that you stop like living in the moment for what you actually realized, like the potential you actualized. And I think that also comes hand in hand with, you know, not only is there the outside means and tools to kind of achieve everything romantically, business-wise, socially, intelligence-wise, all that shit. But then I think it also, there's something internal where I think it all depends on your mindset. That's why like, sometimes I wish I was just not driven at all, not ambitious at all, and just kind of like simple about life. Not to say it's like smart or dumb. It's not a matter of like intelligence. It's just a matter of like being content, being like, I'm just good. Like I got this job out of school, pays me well. It's not, you know, the most fulfilling. I don't like feel satisfied at it, but I'm going to punch in and punch out. You know, and I got this family and we, you know, I'm happy just watching some TV and cracking some beers and living like a happy, simple life. That it sounds fucking amazing to me. But this combination of like my own mindset of being like, you're not good enough. You could always be better. Always go harder, go bigger. More, like looking to, you know, the my peers and contemporaries being like, well, they do this much better and that much bigger and that much more successful and that much more money. I'm like, I gotta go. Never actually taking the time to stop and think like, you know, what you've done so far is pretty fucking good. You know, if you never kind of give yourself credit for what you have achieved, then what's even the point of continuing to achieve more? I talk about this with Quinn on our interview, where it's kind of like, where does it stop? How do you make sure you live in the moment? I use this analogy during our interview. Life is like a swimming pool. in the sense of you want a pool, right? You want to buy this house that's big enough and nice enough. And in the backyard, you dig out a hole and you put an in-ground pool in. And then how many times do you swim in that pool? Fucking never. You know, you're doing like cannonballs when you're a kid, and then you're older, you love to like drink and hang out by the pool. And then once, you know, once you actually own the house and own the pool, you don't ever go in. Don't go swimming. You're not diving off the diving board. You don't want to get all wet and then have to dry off. And so you just don't ever use it. But you wanted that pool. You like, you busted your ass and you worked overtime or you worked extra hours so you could have that thing. And then when you get that thing, you never fucking use it. It's like, what is the fucking point of all this, you know? And that's what drives me crazy on top of a bunch of, you know, I mean, I have, there's way more behind me taking the crazy pills. I harbor a ton of guilt and I feel like I can't move on. And I feel like, you know, anytime I'm happy, that means, you know, I don't deserve all this shit. And then like the public constantly reminding me of it, like all that stuff is, you know, the main issue. But I also have this workaholic mentality. And I think that's all because of what's possible in like the world today. I also sometimes wonder if I feel like what we consume as people has gotten too evolved for us, if you will. Like everything, every movie you watch now, not everyone, but a lot of it, you know, like gone are the days of like the comedy, like the, who was I talking to? Talking to like some producer or comic recently that was saying like that comedy movie genre, if you will, is kind of dead. Like there was that golden age of like Old School and Wedding Crashers and The Hangover, where it was kind of just like a few funny comedians and it's just a zany plot and it's just funny shit. They don't really do that anymore. A lot of it is like deep, dark drama. And a lot of like true crime shit, like reality stuff. And so I think about the movies we watch, the TV shows we watch, even the songs we listen to are like everything so fucking introspective and heavy and thoughtful. And I mean, I don't want to say that's new. There's been like art and music and shit like that for forever that is, you know, thought provoking. But I also think about like, you know, the early stages of movies and TV was like just slice of life, happy shit, you know, like kind of wacky physical humor. I don't know whether it's like the fucking Three Stooges or something, or I Love Lucy, where it's just like, yeah, you know, you come home from work and you put on the sitcoms and the laugh track goes and you kind of chuckle and you go to bed. And now it's like, you know, have you seen this series about like, you know, the what was that fucking series with like the Irish couple, which is like the most, you know, Shakespearean tragic love story of all time, you know, and some of these movies and, you know, Manchester by the Sea, or, and again, none of these are necessarily new, but sometimes I feel like everything we're consuming is because we are, you know, mentally and psychologically kind of, you know, real fucking intense, really far along, where you're starting to like get deep and philosophical and thoughtful on it, where it's just like, Jesus fucking Christ. That's why I think sometimes people like Barstool, although I'm doing the polar opposite of that right now by getting into all of it. But, you know, sometimes you want to just like kick back and laugh about some easy shit. I feel like I don't like the phrase like, you know, we're an escape. Like, oh, I don't talk about the tough issues because we're an escape. Like, that's a cop out. But I do think there's something behind the idea of like, I'm just going to make good old fashioned funny content for the people who are looking for it, because everything else out there, you know, the thought, you think, you look around like Hollywood and all your favorite comics and shit, you know, how many of them stay out of politics and social issues? Like everybody's in on it. And I get why, you know, people have a platform and they feel like they have a responsibility and they have their own thoughts and they want to like help the cause or spread the word or whatever. But it's like, man, some of your favorite comics, some of your favorite actors, singers who are like, you know, they used to just be famous people, stars. They're fucking and singing and drinking and partying and going to parties and red carpets. And now even they are the ones talking about, you know, We have to like worry about these injustices and fix the right the wrongs of the world. And it's like, fuck. Sometimes I just don't know if we're designed for all of this heavy stimulation, or at least not without like some sort of help. I think that's why like therapy is so popular. I think that's why, you know, I'm on the crazy pills. Because it's like, you know, what I do for a living is it's crazy level of stimulation where you got to like soak everything in that's coming at you from all angles. Like you log on and there's literally thousands and thousands and thousands of people and takes and opinions like flying at you. And then there's thousands of people demanding your takes and opinions on it. And then you start to give it, and then you get in an argument, and then you start to get deeper because you want to win your argument. So then you learn some shit that you're like, whoa, I didn't know that before. And that contradicts what I used to learn before, what I used to think. And now I'm starting to question everything that I was raised on. And because, you know, it's totally the opposite these days. And maybe I was wrong back then and I'm right now, or maybe I'm wrong now and I was right back then. And like all the, you know, it's just like, what the fuck is going on? It's all too much. And that I think is my main, the main thing is I'm going to wrap up here and just get into it with Quinn, start talking about life with him before I really fucking spiral out of control. But I think the main thing for me is the feeling what fucks with me the most as I got older and as I'm like, you know, taking this medication now and talking to these doctors and realizing that there's like, I guess I want to say something, I don't want to say something wrong with me, but like, I don't know exactly how to characterize it other than I don't like not being able to trust my own self anymore, which is a weird feeling where it's like, cause I'm, you know, part of me is that Irish Catholic stubborn where it's like, I got a pretty good head on my shoulders. And I think I'm pretty like at least street smart, maybe not book smart, but I'm street smart. And I know people and I can read the room and I can read, you know, situations. And so I know what to do in these situations, you know? And then, you know, you go through some shit, like, you know, I fucked up and I've had, you know, some missteps here and there. And I'm like, and then as the world changes and I learn some things and a lot of the stuff I maybe thought was disproven or, you know, whatever, I'm like, wait a minute, maybe I don't have like the answers. Maybe my gut isn't telling me the right thing all the time. And that's like, that's everything. That's all you got in this world is like your gut shot reaction. Like, here's the situation. What are you going to do? Bam. Here's my answer. I used, you know, for the first like 25, 30 years, whatever, that first instinct was always correct enough. It wasn't, you know, perfect. I wasn't obviously, you know, I wasn't fabulously rich and famous and successful, but I was like doing well enough. And Deloitte was paying me well. And then Barstool came along and I, you know, had this creative thing and I worked hard at it. And it was like, yeah, I mean, I made some right choices and I got some lucky bounces and all this shit. But then when you for the first time in your life, when you go through some real adversity, and again, that's all relative. And I know you can't be telling people like my adversity is real and yours isn't, but you know what I'm talking about. There's a certain level of things. Like everybody goes through the stress of finals and everybody goes through the stress of interviewing for a job and even maybe getting fired from a job. But when you start to go through some shit where, you know, you and your friends have a fork in the road where it's like, everybody went this way and I went that way. You know, I went black sheep over here. I fucked this up or I fucked that up. Or I did, you know, the opposite of what I was supposed to do, whatever. You start to, you know, think like, oh fuck, I was really wrong on that one. So am I right on this next one? What if I'm wrong again right now? What if I'm pretty sure about, you know, this decision, but I was also sure about the one back then that I really fucked up on. So what now, you know? And then when you start to talk to these doctors and now they're telling me I'm on medication, I start to think like, well, then maybe there is something that like my brain is telling me the wrong thing. It's lying to me. So I can't trust myself. I can't trust that first. Yes. Go with your gut. I don't even want to fucking talk about it anymore. Don't even want to fucking talk about it anymore because I'm like, well, then if I don't got that, I got nothing. Also, there's something to be said for like when you live the life I live, it's like I'm arguing so much about these points and my opinions and my viewpoints that like being right is I gotta be right at the end of the day. That's why it's tough to, like, you know, look at some of like the personal problems I've had where it's like, I don't know if it was worth it. Like, things are really fucked up, and I don't know if I can say to myself at the end of the day, like, well, you know, you did what you had to do, or in the moment it was right. It's like, I don't know. I think it was wrong. I think it's going to end up being not worth it. So, you know, when you start to encounter that shit, it's just a total mind fuck. How about that? A total mind fuck where it's like, I hope I'm right. Or I guess the hope is that you do your work and you talk to these people. And in this case, you know, you get some help with some medication or whatever. And then that does help you make the right decisions, or it does help you it gives you a clear enough head to make those choices. But until then, it's kind of like, well, who fucking knows? Just take me back to 25 when I'm like in a shitty job, but everything else is gravy, you know. But you can't go backwards, only gotta go forwards. And so, you know, that's why I'm going to just continue to pour myself into work and hope that that pans out, because that's the only thing I can control. I think there's something very, very calming about, like, there's nobody else's emotions I have to worry about. There's no one else's life I have to worry about. It's just like, the more I do here, the better things will go. So I'm just going to keep on working. Like, sure, you got a boss to worry about and people ahead of you that you got to please in order to, but whatever. It's like, I'm just going to keep doing this because I can tangibly control that. And it's the only fucking thing in this world I can control, is except for my crazy brain, which I guess controls me. Crazy pills for your boy KFC. It's a wild one, folks. I mean, it's crazy to think. I know a lot of you are new listeners, and you're listening to like One Minute Man, and you're it's all new. But some, like the old school people, are like, you've seen me go from 25 back when I was just like easy peasy, living the life, hanging out, chasing chicks, drinking beers. You know, like I said, the throwing parties. The only thing I had to worry about was the hangover. To, you know, settling down, to becoming a father, to becoming a single father. Now, you know, going through that like sort of like midlife crisis moment of like, oh man, I guess I am kind of one of the crazy people. I guess I'm not different. I mean, you've seen it all. You've watched me grow up, grow down, grow left, grow right. You've seen it, like, you know, act one, act two, act three. So here's to act, let's call it four. I don't know where we're at, stage four, or the sequel, or the trilogy, or whatever it is. Let's hope it goes well. I appreciate all the support from you guys. As always, do me a favor, rate, review, and subscribe this, because this is the one show that I will always have, you know, control over, being my name on it and going forward, no matter where I am or end up. But, you know, I need this to be the biggest and most successful thing it can be. So rate, review, and subscribe. It's, you know, I just kind of poured my heart out as an absolute fucking crazy person, lunatic here, saying that the only thing I do have control over is this work. And it's not true. It's actually not true, because you have control over it by doing the rate, the review, and the subscribe. So throw this crazy person a bone and do that for me on the iTunes channel. And please subscribe on the YouTube. Go ahead and watch. You can, if you were listening to this, you can go over and watch it on the YouTube. It's just a one man shot. You can just watch the ramblings of a crazy man. You can see it in person as I look into the camera. So the YouTube is, I've been talking about it on all our platforms. YouTube is a tough nut for us to crack, because it's just not what our demo does. It's just not what our people, our listeners are really like into. Is like having a full subscription list on YouTube where, you know, you curate all the shows you like to watch and all the clips you like to watch. So I'm trying to just convince people to do something that they don't naturally do, which is, I don't do it either. So it's hard for me to tell you to do it. But if you are on YouTube and you do watch any of these videos, just hit the subscribe button, hit the like button, the thumbs up. Even if you don't use YouTube, if you have a Gmail, you can log in and just press subscribe, even if you don't really go back and look at it or use it. Just every subscriber helps. So you can watch the video, you can watch the clips. We put One Minute Man up there, so you'll get a lot of extras and a lot of, you know, nice tight clips if you don't want to watch the full episode, but that'll be there as well. So hook your boy up on the iTunes and YouTube, and follow along on Twitter, Kevin Clancy Show. And of course on Instagram, KFC Barstool. Let's get into it now with Quinn 92. Kind of a a little bit of a lighter version, but more of the same of just like life and how it comes to be. And
recently, like once this got booked, so this all came about, I tweeted my Spotify year end top five and you were in it. And
yeah.
You said, let's run it back on the podcast. So I've been talking to a lot of people, and every time I say Quinn 92, they go, oh, that's what that is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, man, you must deal with that a lot. Like, are there people out here calling you Quinn XCII, or they just don't even get it? They don't know what.
Dude, I the whole joke kind of is like me making fun of myself for people not knowing how to say my name properly.
Right.
And I get it, because like it's not an easy name to like decipher when you first see it at all. So
no, give me the correct name here.
It's Quinn. Yeah, it's Quinn 92.
Like, official though, like that's what you go by. That's what it is. Quinn 92. We'll, the people. Yeah,
yeah. We'll clarify it right now. But yeah, no, it's kind of a funny like inside joke we have with just like fans and people who are just finding my music. I don't know. It's kind of nice though, because I think once people like know how to say the name, you kind of feel like you're like a part of this like special.
You're in.
Little,
yeah.
Like, yeah.
Well, like I mentioned it to my dude Caleb, who's like, you know, on the cutting edge of music, and he's like, oh yeah, like I fuck with him. I always just said like, yeah, I love that dude, that guy, that's right. Just dope. Like he just right. Never just didn't say the name, you know?
Right. No, I get it. Trust me, I get it. Yeah.
But yeah, it is like an extra little hook that I'd imagine is, you know, like you said, a little like Easter egg almost. What was the I know 92 was just the year you were born, right? So is that,
yeah,
it was just like, you know, roll with something about yourself and make it a little bit unique.
Yeah, so Quinn, like I grew up doing music. I was like rapping early in my high school years, and it was terrible. But
that was the Mike T years, right?
Yeah, 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 yeah. So I was just getting kind of like, I was getting into music to start, but I knew I loved doing it. So like as I got more into it, I was like, all right, I got to think of something a little less like nicknameish. Mike T is just not like that.
Right.
Catchy, at least I thought. So I wanted to come up with an acronym that kind of stood for like stuff that I believe in and something that kind of gave my image like a bit more like well-roundedness to it. So I chose Quinn, which stands for quit unless your instincts are never neglected, which basically just means like, go ahead, quit if you're not into something. But if you have this sort of instinct inside you that like you want to push forward and it gives you joy and stuff, and whether it's sports or music or writing,
yeah,
like I just, yeah, urge people to follow that intuition, which it's kind of a cliche statement, but I think more people need to hear it nowadays. I think it's
for sure
easy to kind of share your dreams.
It's nice when something like that works out. Like Quinn, right, is also just it's a good name. It's a cool name. It's got the Q in it. It's just like, if it was if it was an acronym that like didn't result in like a easy name like that, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
You don't want to shoehorn it in, but when it has that extra meaning behind it. I go both ways on that. I feel like Mike T could have worked. I feel like if you made the same music you made, and you know, maybe you wouldn't have popped if you had a more generic name. But
yeah,
once you did, I feel like people would be like, yeah, Mike T, that's Mike T. I don't know. Like, I can see you can either oversimplify it or you make it, you know, interesting. But I think it's, those are both like viable avenues kind of.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. I mean, and it's funny because like I've seen interviews from like G-Eazy, for example, and he still goes on record saying he hates his name. He thinks it's like when he first came up with it, like he thought it was like, again, like kind of nicknameish, kind of just like corny, but it just stuck. And he was like, I can't change it now. So
I'm like, dude, I hate my podcast name. KC Radio is the worst podcast name in the world. I made it fucking 9 years ago now, back when like podcasts. So like KFC Radio is my podcast, but I also host,
yeah,
a radio show.
Yeah.
So the name that has radio in it is not my radio show. People think it's chicken related.
I was going to ask you, like, did you, when you were like, you know, first coming up, like doing what you're doing, like, did you see a lot of issues with it, with yourself being named KFC and also the company?
Not issues, but just like, I do always get like, it's just my initials. Like when I first started at Barstool, I didn't want to put my name, my government name out there. And I was just like, KFC is my initials, whatever. Like I'll roll with that.
Yeah.
But then, you know, every time early on, it was like, do you like the chicken? Do you work with the company? You know? And I always just like quickly answered, I'm still waiting. Like, yo, KFC, hit me up. Like, let's like make me the new Colonel Sanders. Let's fucking go. I'm waiting for that.
I don't know how that hasn't happened yet, because that's a perfect match. Yeah.
You know, maybe not too brand safe or whatever, but I'm waiting. Right. But I'm at the point where if I had a really good name that made sense for me and my partner Feidelberg. And like, if it just worked, we would probably do it.
Yeah.
But anything that we would probably do would be a little bit forced, and we would get people going like, wait, what the fuck, where to go? Right. So it's just like not worth it. But man, like I sympathize with G-Eazy and anybody who's like, ah, the horse is out of the barn on this one. We can't really change it, you know?
I think at the end of the day, though, we all kind of like think, I mean, whether it's the name or just like, just anything that makes us self-conscious as like humans, like we overanalyze it. Like, I don't think anyone really gives a fuck that like if I kept Mike T, no one would think twice about it. I would probably just think it's stupid, but everyone else would catch on to it. And whatever.
No, I mean, think about, have you ever in the history of your life been like, oh, I love that guy's music, but I don't like his name, so I'm not listening.
Exactly. Or, exactly.
You know, I like that podcast, but like, oh, that name's tough, so I'm not going to listen. It's just not, right. You know, so you put so much, we think about, we worry about logos and catchphrases and show. Just, I'm in the process now of like rebranding and relaunching this show. And they're hitting me up like, we need a show description.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, I'm like, okay, let me come up with one. But I'm thinking to myself, I don't think I've ever read a show description on iTunes in my whole fucking life.
No, I haven't. So, I definitely haven't. Yeah.
No, you know, so maybe the, you know, the publicist needed and then this needed and that needed. But, you know, there's so much. It's just about like what you put out.
It's just the content. Yeah. Everything else is just add on bullshit. It doesn't really matter.
Which, I mean, is going, going well for you, bro. I feel like the content game, I feel like the music has popped. I feel like you just, do you feel like you've arrived and you've made it? Do you feel some sort of like, you know, maybe not vindication is the word, but on some level are you like, all right, there's more to achieve, but like, I'm good. I made it to at least where I want to be.
Yeah. Well, I thank you for saying that, but I think for me, I've never like sat down and been like, oh my gosh, I made it. Like I hope at least I never have that kind of feeling, because I think once I do, I'm just going to be less motivated. And
yep.
I think the more I not even to tell myself, but I just like naturally feel like I just have way more to accomplish. And I think that's good. And I think maybe you could probably attest to that. Like, I think everyone who's driven in their careers, like, doesn't really like have a, maybe some people have a mountaintop, but for me, I don't really see one at the moment. So like, I'm just like chasing something that
always
maybe isn't even there, but it keeps me going and it keeps me motivated and gets me to wake up, because I don't have like, I don't have a boss. So it's like, I have to like keep myself determined and stuff. So that is kind of like the fuel under my ass.
That's the positive spin of that for sure.
Yeah.
I feel almost the other way. I've been having this thought recently that in my mind, I've come to this realization that life, stick with me on this one, life is like a swimming pool. This is my philosophical fortune cookie thing. Like, everybody who has a pool is always like, I never use the pool. Yeah. I never swim in it, you know? And it's like something you think, like, I'm going to get like a big mansion. I'm going to have this beautiful pool outside. And then you never use it. You never enjoy, you know, you had this in your mind as like a level or a goal you wanted to achieve. You buy it, you have it. It's great. You never use it.
Yeah.
And I think like when you're constantly like going for more and more and more, you never feel satisfied. You never like, you gotta like give yourself a moment to be like, okay, well, I want to win a Grammy now. But, you know, celebrate the fact that you sold this many records. And then I want to win, you know, there's certainly more to achieve. But if you never stop to think like, all right, I set out to have a blog and I did a blog. Now I did a podcast. Now I did, and I want to keep going. But it also, like, I can't lose sight of the fact that we are doing we've achieved some good shit.
Of course. Yeah. I love that you said that, because I also, there's this band I was going to go on tour with this year. They're named AJR, and obviously coronavirus canceled all that, but I'm sure we'll get into the touring shit and like whatever, but I bring them up because they have a song called Next Up Forever, and it's literally kind of about, I think, what you were just saying, but like, they don't ever want to blow up. They just want to be like the next guy up, but they don't ever want to be the number one, because what's special is the process of getting to that point. That's something like worth reminding people, is like, I think once you do attain all these things, and by no means do I think I have attained everything I want in life, but I've definitely got to a point where I look back and be like, oh shit, like, yeah, I've made some pretty like cool, like milestones, but I still don't like necessarily feel completely at ease. Like, I still want more. So I think it's good to remind people, like, the best part of your life is, and your career is like, the shit you put into getting to that point.
Yeah, like next up forever. Next up forever is a good mantra. Yeah.
It is. It's like you never want to be that guy. You always kind of want to be like on the bubble looking in, and because
I do sometimes feel like I say things like that. But it's also like you say that when you can't, if you're not sure if you can get to be like, I want to be that guy. I want to get there. Like, don't get me wrong. I want to be there. It's convenient to be like, oh, I don't want to be like the number one guy when, you know, you can't get to number one.
Yeah. It's kind of like an excuse to be like, I'm not good enough to get there.
But there is, when you apply that logic about the journey and getting there, and that keeps you hungry and motivated, you know, that's the way to be. But so here's my problem too. And I saw a headline about an article interview you just did, and I'm wondering if you feel the same thing. I started out, I got my MBA. I was an accountant. I was going down a finance path, and I quickly realized how bad I was at that, how much I fucking hated it. It was not for me, and so I got out. And my initial goal truly was like, I just want to have a job that's not soul crushing like that was, and so. When even if shit goes wrong in the podcasting, blogging, content world, even if I'm not at the top, even if there's some shit of like parts of it that drive me crazy, I always fall back on like, well, at least I'm not stuck in the cube.
And
on some ways that's good. It keeps me, it does give me a sense of like, I did achieve my one main thing, but also it's, you know, it can be like a fallback where it's like, well, all right, well, as long as I'm not, you know, just living that life. And I know the headline I saw was that you almost kind of went down that office life road as well?
Yeah. I went to Michigan State, and then I graduated and worked for about like 5 months at an insurance company in downtown Detroit. And just
insurance.
It was honestly, I don't even really feel bad talking shit about the company. It was just like not a well-run company. And like, I did not love it. And I mean, the people I worked with were great, but I didn't like the constant, A, I didn't like working in a cubicle, like you noted, but B, just like office life, I realized, and like, kind of like, I think Mark Wahlberg said in a movie, like, I'm a peacock. I need to like throw, like spread my wings and like,
yeah.
I don't actually stand by that like sentiment, but in a certain way, like I do, because I feel like I would, so, okay, let me back up a bit. So I would play like college shows at the weekends.
While you were doing insurance.
While I was working insurance.
Love that. I did the double life too. It's something I'm very proud of, that like my accounting coworkers and clients had no idea that I blogged, and my blogging readers had no idea that I was an accountant. And I like, I wear that like a badge of honor. And I was like, I was playing everybody, you know?
You feel like Batman. You feel like Batman. Yeah. So, I mean, to a way much not less exciting. Less exciting. But so like to kind of brief you on like what I was feeling at the time, like I would be doing, you know, Monday to Thursday shit, like Monday, Friday, like working like 9 hours a day. And then on the weekends, I would go play like Midwest college shows, like Miami of Ohio, Dayton, whatever. And then I would come back. I go from being this guy in a cubicle who gets told like from like a 48-year-old woman, like what to do, crunch numbers, all this shit. Mind you, I'm like terrible at math, so I was bad at the job anyways. And then I go do these shows, and like I'm like the man, and people are like screaming my name, and
girls are all over you. People buying you drinks. You're on stage. You're the center of attention. Yep.
So it's like I go from like the lowest of lows on my Monday to Fridays, and then I go like weekend start, and I'm like the guy, and then I come back Monday and do it all over again. And so I was like, this isn't. I have to pick.
And the minute that you start to feel some real success in your whatever, if it's music, it's blogging, whatever. Like there came a point where I was like, I'm not going to be able to let you tell me what to do anymore. Like, because in my other life, I get enough respect and I get enough love that eventually that just bubbles up. And it's like, I can't do this anymore.
You just get more confidence to be like, yo, go fuck yourself.
Shut the fuck up. Yeah. So I wanted to, I needed to make sure I kept my health insurance. And cause I had a bunch of surgeries and shit. I could not be one of those dudes who just didn't have benefits. Yeah. And I wanted to see if I could get some severance. So I dug my heels in and I made Deloitte, which is like a big accounting firm, fire. Yeah. And they were like, it takes a long time to fire someone at one of those big firms because you got to like check every box and make sure that you can't be sued. So they were like, why don't you transfer to another group? And I was like, nah, I'm good. And they were like, but we're going to have to fire you then. I was like, we're good. Let's like go ahead, fire me. Yeah. And it took like 6-8 months, something like that. So it was like a long time where I was mailing it in. They knew it. They were trying to fire me. I was trying to get fired. And I was like, you got to make it happen, guys. Like, just get this shit done. But it's a weird double life where, because there's just such an inherent like disrespect in the corporate world where it's it's not even like it's not like the people I worked with were bad people like shitting on me, but there's just an inherent structure of shit rolls downhill. And if you're above somebody, you kind of like, you're their bitch, and it's just how it goes, you know?
It's just the hierarchy of it is just, yes. It feels like high school kind of in a way. Yeah. But let me ask you, so like when you were, you know, trying to get fired, was Barstool like already lined up? Like, was your gig there already going? Like,
I would love to say that I was one of those dudes that like took my balls in my hand and took it all. But the reality is that I was like, I am not leaving this paycheck and this situation until this one is like good to go. Yeah. So, I mean, I took a pay cut and I took a risk for sure. Like when I finally made the jump to full time, I was comfortable that like it wasn't going to go under in the next 6 months, but yeah. I never in a million years thought it could be this.
Yeah.
And there were, you know, there was a couple of years early on that was touch and go where I remember thinking like, this probably isn't going to work and I'm going to have to go back to that life. But hey, it was a fun ride, a fun experiment. Yeah. So there was enough of a risk, but I never really said like, you know, fuck it, I'm out. I waited it out until, you know, I kind of played both sides until, you know, I could like gradually move over.
Yeah.
But yeah, that, you know, there was a time where I was like double dipping. I was getting paid a little bit from Barstool, good money over there. And I was like, I could maybe just keep doing this forever. Mm-hmm. But it got to the point where it was like, I had too much pride in my content and too much, you know, I hated what I was doing more and more. And over here, I loved what I was doing more and more. And I was like, man, if I'm achieving this with like maybe 50% effort, what could I do with 100%?
Yeah.
And I just owed it to myself. So I like, give it a shot. Did you have a moment, a song, a tour date, something where you were like, all right, I'm gone. Fuck it. I'm done.
So what's funny is back to kind of that conversation I was just having with you about like me going from, you know, weekday life to weekend weekends to weekdays. We had a song, it was called Kings of Summer. And yeah. It's with my buddy AOK, someone that I grew up with.
Fucking produced, man.
He's great, man. Yeah, yeah. Shout out to Alex. I don't know if he's gonna watch this or not, but he's the man. And I grew up with him, like went to school together, elementary, and so it's been cool for us to like have our careers, you know, take off as they have, and just kind of do this with someone you are friends with, like genuinely, and yeah. But anyways, so we have this song. It's called Kings of Summer, and it went viral on Spotify. It went like number one on the global charts, and at the time that wasn't. As like Spotify wasn't as big of a deal as it is now,
right?
Which is crazy because that was only like 6 or 5 years ago. So
Spotify had a big old blow up. Yeah,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
You hit number one on Spotify now. It's like you have the number one song in the world. Back then, it was kind of underground. It was kind of
right. Which is funny to say because like if I had that now, my life would be way different. So we had that song, and that's when that song went number one. And what's funny is that the reason why it helped to get number one was Ian Desmond from the Texas Rangers had that song as his walk-up song. And people at the stadium were like Shazamming it as it was being played, like six seconds. And so that helped it get like more popular in the Texas area, in the Dallas area. And then just, I don't know what happened, but it got to number one on Spotify, and then labels started calling and getting our attention. But then I was like, all right, I think this is my time to be like, I'm done the health insurance route. Like I'm reaching a point where I can confidently like tell my parents, like, look,
that was me too.
Yeah. Like I have real companies like wanting to talk with me about my music, and, but they were always really cool about it. So I never felt pressured to, you know, stick to a 9-to-5. Like they were very supportive of what I was doing. And for that reason alone, I think it gave me a lot of confidence because I know where I'm from in Michigan, Grosse Pointe, it's a suburb that like a lot of people are kind of groomed to become doctors and lawyers, and it's a pretty well kept little suburb. So for me, I was really grateful to have parents that were like supportive of my creative, stupid side. Because clearly, as a parent, if you have your kid be like, "I want to be a singer," they'd be like, "You know,
come on, yeah.
What are the chances
of that? Yeah."
Right. So, but they were really cool about it. I don't think they thought it was going to work out, but I think they just kind of gave me like a couple years of like cushion to like figure it out.
That's such a good like piece of advice, I think, for parents, because my parents were the same way. They were never the oppressive, like, no, you have to stay in corporate America and earn your paycheck. But they also weren't like, you're going to be a superstar, honey. I'm like, all right, you know, you're going to make similar money. You look like you're going to be able to pay your bills. Give it a shot. Now's the time to take a risk, and you can always fall back and blah, blah, blah. My brother is kind of like, you're A-OK. Like, he's my producer. We brought him over. Cool. And he's a little older than me, so he was going down the same road as my father. And I remember he said he was, like, almost nervous to tell my dad, like, you know, thanks for, like, all the leg up you gave me and the jobs you got me, but I'm going to, like, switch gears. Like, sorry. Yeah. And he was like, are you kidding? Like, go fucking go. You can get out of this life and go do some cool, like, radio shit. Like, go. So I think you got to, like, remember that, like, your parents are somewhere deep down just people too, who are like, that's kind of dope. Like, they want to protect you. But also, if there's an opportunity, I wonder, it's like, how good do you think you need to be? You know, like, fucking LeBron James's parents were like, yeah, we're going down this road. Like, he's going to be it. But if it's not like a surefire, you can sing, you can ball, you can write, you can do whatever, you're probably always inherently like, well, like, this probably isn't going to work, right? Like,
yeah. I think LeBron's parents were just like, look, this kid's a physical specimen.
Like, yeah, you can see it, you know, it's
right. Like, I can actually, like, I looking at LeBron, I'm like, okay, you're going to be probably something someday.
Yeah.
But like, with me, it's like, you like you said, like, art or whatever, like,
anything that's objective.
Right. It's just like, you have to trust the person's mind and, like, their ideas. And there's nothing, like, on paper that's going to say they're going to be a success story. So
and inherently, that first time where you have to trust your kid's instinct or whatever, it's like, you've spent. So how old are you? Like, what?
28.
20, yeah. So at that point, like, you know, your parents are like, for 20 plus years, they've made every decision. They're the smart ones. They know what's right. And now all of a sudden, you just got to give the keys to the car to them and be like, you know, but I think that like, we support you, but we're not going to give you any, like, false sense of it's going to be easy or like, yeah, you're going to make it, honey. You're the cutest boy in school. You're so handsome.
Yeah.
It's like, it's going to be a
I don't know if it was Bill Burr or someone said it, like, a comedian was like, I'll never tell my kids they're going to, like, dunk a basketball, because that's, like, a very small percentage of people will ever be able to dunk a basketball.
Right.
So, like, but I'm going to, like, I'm also not going to say, like, you can't do it, but I'm just not going to give them false hope that it's a for sure thing. So I think, like you said, kind of, like, I think looking back now, I'm a little appreciative that my parents never were like, you're going to be a superstar. Like, you're like, you can do it. Cause if anything, that would have, like, fucked with my confidence. Like, it would have almost made it, it almost would have made me feel like I was, like, letting them down if I didn't figure it out, because, like, I had this, like, pedestal I was already put on. So they're just like, look, like, do a couple years in this. If it doesn't work out, like, let's come to a mutual understanding.
Whatever. Right.
That's probably the best way to approach, like, dream. Again, I don't have kids, so I don't know. But, like, if I could tell my kids, like, follow your dreams, it'd be like, all right, like, you're going to have a couple years to figure this out. And
it's more like, I say, like, attempt your dreams. Solid go to the point that you either achieve it or you can say to yourself, like, well, I really fucking made an honest shot, but I got to go back to health insurance. It's funny to say, literally, like, for me, literally dunking a basketball. When I grew up playing ball, I bought these, like, rubber things that you strapped to your shoes so that you were constantly on your toes. So you were constantly flexing your calves to try to jump higher. And I'm, now that you say that, I am thinking about my parents, who probably watched me strap these fucking things on like a goofy white kid, being like, I'm gonna dunk a basketball one day. And they probably were like, you're never gonna dunk a basketball, but go practice. Go ahead.
I told my parents I wanted to be a professional speed skater, and I would I would put a snow, this is back when, like, you remember Paulo Anton Ono, that dude, the Olympics? This was back when that was going on, and I would literally rollerblade around my driveway down to the street and come back. And my parents probably thought I was like a serial killer. They were just like,
they got bigger concerns than your career. They're like, oh, he's got problems, man.
Right. So, like, music probably actually wasn't the craziest thing I could have told them, because looking back, I probably had some even crazier ideas.
Yeah. So that moment hits, Kings of Summer, you go number one, and you, like, What's that first day of the rest of your life like, where it's like, okay, now I don't have a 9-to-5, now what? I just hit the studio, start writing, start recording. Like,
well, it wasn't like that really. Like, it was still pretty terrifying. Like, I still was living at my parents' house. So at the time I was saving up to move to LA, because that was kind of like the inevitable place where, like, if you want to be in music or entertainment, like, you got to go there. So I wanted to get, like, I think it was like 10 grand I wanted to save up and then make the move. And so I was about, like, I was about 4 weeks away from hitting my goal. And then we got signed to Columbia Records. We took a meeting with them over the weekend, while I was still working this insurance job. And we got a phone call from them, like, the following Monday, saying, you know, they're interested, and they gave me like an advance. And so that, and it was far more than what I was saving up for. So I was like, all right, I'm good now. I'm moving out to LA.
Did you give any thought to, I'm always fascinated in the idea of labels versus staying independent now.
Well, I think for me, like, it's a funny conversation, because you look at guys like, you know, Chance the Rapper and other people who have, like, paved the way. Maybe he's actually the only one that comes to mind, but, like, everyone has that conversation. I think for me, though, what set my, like, standards apart from staying independent to being on, like, a major label was that I just wanted to really, at some point, I think you kind of have to have that, like, mechanical hand come in a bit and, like, have a company drive your music to mass people that you could never naturally get your music in front of. Right. Like, it's just not practical to think that you could get your songs, if you were independent, to everyone in the world. And so at least having that company sort of fuel the fire and put your music on some sort of, you know, pedestal and be like, look, this is who we're repping with. If you guys like it, great. Yeah. If not, whatever. Like, that's all I really wanted. I just wanted eyeballs and people to have a chance to listen. And if they didn't fuck with it, then it's fine. But right. I think I was looking at that from that standpoint, being like, how am I going to maximize, like, my experiment here? Like, how am I going to get my music to everyone? And that was the giveaway.
I feel like you got to be the LeBron James of music to be like, I don't need a label. I'll stay independent. You got to be ultra cocky, ultra confident, and have a fucking plan. Because, yeah, right now, does Taylor Swift wish she wasn't caught up in this whole fucking thing and had all her masters? Yes. Would she have gotten there without, you know, IMG or whoever it is? Like, maybe, probably not. So
I was going to say, even so, I still don't think you could have the most talent in the world, and I still think you have to have someone behind you, like a record label, like, pushing it. Yeah, just because, again, like, the music business is just so, it's political, it's shisty, it's all this stuff. And I think if you're your sole person, and, like, you're responsible for every aspect of your career, it can only go, there's a ceiling to it naturally. And yeah, there's a ceiling for being on a label too, but you're definitely going to raise that a lot more.
I mean, I think that, you know, the idea is, like, you don't need them per se, because you can put it out yourself and there are no barriers of entry. But along with no barriers of entry come, well, now everybody can do it. And how do you stand out? And how do you, you know, now it's just white noise. You're just another fucking, you know, college white kid trying to rap, trying to do pop, trying to, you know, it's like, how do you get that separation from a fucking label?
Right, exactly. And it's like, yeah, I mean, like, in you know, it comes with the cost of being called, you know, like, a sellout or whatever. But at the end of the day, you know, like, it's if I want to get my music to as many people and ultimately help as many people, because that's really what I'm trying to do, is just, you know, like, it's not just I'm at first I was, like, trying to make, you know, just cool shit and get a bunch of streams and stuff. But I think now, after, like, reading, you know, comments from fans and DMs and all this stuff, I've realized, like, it's really more important that I take this responsibility for and use it for a positive, and that being just helping people as much as I can. So a label really can help with that. Like, it can help with people everywhere in the world. Like, whereas if I was doing this myself, you know, it would be a handful of people in weird markets, and I don't know, it just wouldn't be as mass produced as it is. So,
I feel like your music, a lot of, like, I guess this happened to me recently, and I guess later in life. So I'm 36 now, and I would probably say in the last 3 years, my life, I went off the rails. I went through a divorce. I went through this public scandal. All sorts of bad shit happened. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, for the first time, every TV show, movie, song I listened to, all of a sudden, like, meant something and, like, hit different. Like, for the longest time, I was living a pretty, like, cushy life. Like, grew up. Upper middle class, never really had much adversity other than, like, grandma and grandpa dying. There was never any problems. Always got to a good school, got a girlfriend, got a job. It was all good. So songs to me were just like, I like the beat. I like the hook. I love rap music. So I'm always interested in like wordplay and shit, but it never wasn't like, I wasn't really like relating or resonating with songs. Mm-hmm. And now I feel like I listen so much more intently, and words and songs and stories, like I'm like, I can relate now and I can hear and I'm like, oh shit. And I feel like in a lot of your music, it seems like it's coming from a place that's like very specific, or it happened to you, or is that the case? Like when I hear like Straight Jacket, I'm like, that feels like he's talking about like a specific person. Mm-hmm. Or when I hear like, it'll always be you. I'm like, that, you know, feels like it. You're writing from a place of like reality in a way. Is that the case? Is a lot of that like life experiences?
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty much all life experience with the exception of sometimes I do like to create fictional stories and talk about stuff that I know that even though I haven't experienced it, there's probably people out there that have. And so what's cool about being like a songwriter is that sometimes you don't have to pull from personal experience, because you can kind of get creative and you can kind of come up with this like little world that maybe someone out there like
that's
relates
the sweet
to.
Spot. See, that's a great spot where it's like, when like, I just assumed that, you know, oh, that struck a chord with me, so he must have gone through it.
Yeah.
And then maybe for those songs, you were like, yeah, I'm just going to like make some shit up. It's like a movie goes big and they're like, oh, the director, he made him wear blue because of da-da-da-da. And the director's like, nah, man, I just like blue. Like, I just wanted to write a song, whatever. Right. That's a great spot to be in.
No, it is. It is. But yes, to answer your question, like the bulk of what I do is the stuff that I make is from personal experience. And it's funny because like a lot of it, like you said, Straight Jacket, like, that song is about my ex-girlfriend in high school. And like a lot of my like breakup songs are about my like high school girlfriends. So I'm 28 now, like I'm happily married. Like I've been with my wife now for like we were together for like 5 years and then got married. And so it's all good. But like, I'm constantly like diving back into my high school life, because I feel like that's where I can like channel my sad boy, like
emotions. Yeah, sad boy season. Let's go. Yeah. Yep.
So it's like, I asked myself the other day, I was like, how long am I going to keep doing this? Cause like that poor girl is like, probably like, how many fucking songs are you going to write? So, I don't know. It's funny. Like it's, while personal experience creates like the most authentic content, in my opinion, it definitely comes at a risk, cause you're constantly kind of diving back into the mind of like memories. And sometimes that isn't good for you. Like living in the past, like it you know, you obviously want to stay present and look forward. And so like going back all the time can kind of be a detriment, but I think in doing that, you sometimes pick some of the juiciest stuff that people really, really grab onto. So it's all about a balance, I think.
Yeah. Like if it's stuck in your mind for, you know, what, 12 years, something was going on where it's still with you, you know, but it's also funny to think. So like, I listen to that song and I'm kind of relating, and then you tell me it's about when you were like 15, and I'm like, fuck, well, maybe I shouldn't be relating to that. You know what I mean? Shit, I shouldn't be, you know, maybe the girls I'm talking to, you know?
Yeah.
That's funny, man. It's weird how, you know, if you tell me that a 15-year-old's dating someone, I'm like, whatever, you know, you're not. You're not in love. You don't know what you're talking about. But there's shit that happens when it's, you know, a new experience or the first time or whatever that sticks with you. And like, you had a lot to learn, but that doesn't mean you didn't like feel some shit.
I mean, yeah. Like look at like Billie Eilish is 18 now, I think, but she got on, you know, put onto the scene when I think she was 16 or I think even 15. And she's talking about stuff that, you know, a 30-year-old woman probably wouldn't even have the courage to talk about or have the life experience to talk about. So yeah, you can't second guess people that age. I mean, and I agree with you, like initially when I hear a person that age say stuff like that, I'm kind of like, okay, I'm taking it with a grain of salt. Like, I'm like, how much has your heart really been rolling?
Yeah.
Right. But like, you know, life has also changed dramatically. Like the way social media and technology, like kids are going through shit that we never went through. So
if anything, they've got it the worst, because they're going through all this shit without like the mental capacity to deal with it yet, because of social media and the internet and interconnectivity and all that. It's like they should just be out riding their bikes and fucking, you know, chasing girls. And instead they're going through like depression and shit.
Right. For real.
And we don't know how to fix it, cause we didn't go through it. It's it's dark out there, man.
No, I know. So I've been growing. It went from kind of like, I was like making fun of kids to like, I have a lot of sympathy for them now. Cause the more I'm seeing it, I'm like, damn, like there's a lot of like different elements being like played out in their childhood that for you. You and I had no, like, no familiarity with at all. So,
yeah. See, you know. I say my thing is that we are the greatest generation in my mind.
The kids that, like, just missed TikTok.
yes. Like, we are technologically savvy. We can use the computer and the internet and the phones and the apps. Although I'm starting to tap out. Like, TikTok has been very tough for me to, like, adapt to. I think I might have hit my limit. So we can handle it. But we also had enough experience. I'm a little bit older than you, but we all had enough experience where, like, I didn't have an entire library of HD porn at my fingertips. I didn't have all this download this and stream that, where you had the world literally in your pocket. So I'm like, I remember when I had to download my porn, and I remember that, but I can also adapt as well. That's like, we're the last and the only generation that's right in that sweet spot. Forget about it. I don't care if you fought World War II. We're the greatest.
I don't give a shit about you, Grandpa. I'm the greatest in this family. Yeah, no, man, I agree with you. It's funny. I was just saying that to a friend also. It's like, we kind of had the last sliver of, like, because we had a balance. You're right. Because we had, like, you know, Facebook and these platforms come out, but it wasn't as intense as it is now. Like even like Instagram was, when it first came out, like, there was such less, like, elements to it than there are now.
You just, like, post a picture and, like, that's it, really, you know? Yeah.
Right. But you're right. Like, we had to go through, you know, illegally downloading music, like, pirating shows, like, all this stuff. And so now, to kind of, like, see a world where all that is, like you said, at your fingertips, you kind of appreciate
it. Like, dude, if I had to go through, you know, I don't have as many, like, followers as, like, the cool kids in school do, or I don't get enough likes on my pictures, or, like, oh my God, I'd be a fucking basket case.
Yeah.
Or more importantly, like, all my, you know, every dumb thing I ever did is on fucking record and on the internet, and everything is put on blast. It's like, you know, I could barely handle that as an adult, let alone if I was 15.
Dude, I know. Well, that's the problem. Like, I don't know if, I know Instagram still has likes and, like, numbers and stuff, but, like, all these kids are basing their lives off numbers, and, like, they're that's how they're giving themselves self-worth, is an amount. And to me, it's so toxic. And so you're right. I don't know how I would have dealt with that. So that's where I go back to saying, like, I really have sympathy for kids these days. Like, it's such data driven bullshit. And, like, but that's how you, like, account for, like, your, like, popularity. Sure. And
it's like, you're how do you measure it? Like, that's it. It's crazy. Yeah. And like, so much of what you do now is for other people. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, there was a time where if you wanted to just, like, do a project around your house, like, I want to fucking, like, renovate my garage myself. I guess it's when you're a little bit older, but, like, you just do this, do it yourself project at home for yourself. Mm-hmm. Just because I wanted to learn how to fucking do this and build it and make this.
Now you're, like, putting it on your story.
And maybe, you know, you had a neighbor come over, some friends, and they go, oh, wow, you look what you did with the place. But it wasn't like, well, what if I do all this and then a million people don't follow it or like it? Then what was it for? It's like, it was for, you wanted to achieve something, kind of like you said earlier. Like, you have goals you set out for, but now it's so determined by what other people think about it.
Yeah.
That you lose sight of what you actually want to do and why you want to do it.
That's really fascinating. Yeah, you're right. Because, back in the day, you'd have, like, and I say back in the day, like, I'm from the fucking 60s or something, but, like, like, you'd have a couple compliments. You're like, all right, cool, that was worth it. Like, yeah, like, that's all I want. And now you need the validation of thousands of followers. And and,
like, people that don't matter to you at all.
No. Like, humans just weren't meant to, like, be in front of that many people and, like, have that opinion of that many people.
Right. No, like, I don't think your brain and your heart can process it, you know?
No.
I think, in a weird way, like, one of the worst times of my life, but the best thing that happened to me, at least for my career. So, like, when I went through that divorce and that scandal, I went, like, all the way through the fire. I wrote a long piece about it. I called it The Edge, where it was, like, I think it was a quote from Hunter S. Thompson that was basically, like, summed up as, like, the people who have gone over the edge can, like, tell you about the edge. You know what I mean? So I used to worry about comments and feedback about whether I was, like, funny or whether that was well written or just things about, like, my performance and my ego and all that. And then things shifted to a much more serious criticism of like who I was that I stopped caring about like what they think about my blogging or my podcast or whatever. And now that that other shit has settled down, it's like, I don't care anymore. I don't care what you think. I had to go through a shit ton to get through that. And I think until you've gone through some real shit, a lot of the bullshit feels real. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Unless you've gone through like, okay, well that I used to stress over that, but this is the real thing. And now that that old stress is nothing anymore. But until you've gone through it, you can only base it on your personal experience. And it still feels so important, but it's really not.
No. I mean, it's how you gain perspective, you know, like you said, you have to go through the what you think is bullshit. And then, no, I'm sorry. You have to go through like what is bullshit to realize what you thought was nothing in the first place.
Exactly that.
No, man, you're right. You're totally right. And like with me also, like I scrutinize, you know, songs of mine that haven't gotten more popular than I thought they should and all this shit. And as long as I had to kind of realize that, like, as long as I'm good with it and like the content I'm making, I'm comfortable with and I'm proud of it. Yeah. Again, it sounds cliche, but like, it's so true. Like, that's how I know it's a success. The validation of like numbers and people like
being good,
like, it's great. Yeah. But like, if you yourself can't give yourself the stamp of approval, I think it's worth checking that out because it's really important too. And you're going to lose sleep over it if you don't.
Going back to LA, like when you moved out there, it does feel like you have to go to LA, right? In the music or entertainment world. Mm-hmm. But like, so you're like Detroit, I feel like has kind of this spot on the map, like music wise, where like dating back to like Motown and shit, but then like Eminem and then even kind of like the Mike Posner, Big Sean, you know, like it's always been on the map a little bit. Do even all those guys, does everybody end up out in LA, or is there anybody who just says like, fuck it, I'm staying home and doing it from here?
Well, no, I mean, yes and no. Like a lot of people, I think, get a taste of Los Angeles and they try to figure out their way here. I mean, this is just from experience of people I've seen from a distance, like Big Sean, Mike Posner.
Yeah.
And then I think they figure out like, look, is this me? Like, is this how, like, am I the same person I was before I moved out here? And if not, like a lot of them do go back to Michigan and they build studios and they have the money now where they can like, it's kind of like a cash grab. Like you go to LA for a couple of years, you find it out. And then you're like, I'm going back home and building all this where I can just work from the comfort.
It almost feels like what we said about the internet. Like, I don't think the human brain and heart can process and handle LA for more than like a couple of years. Like
LA is like one big social media app. Like it's and like I live in Venice, so there's kind of a nice mix of local and trendiness here. So it's not bad. But I go to other places where I'm like, I have to go back to Detroit like yesterday. Like
check yourself. You know what I mean?
That's why I like New York a lot. Cause you get checked every second. You're just like, yeah. And that's what's great. You never can get ahead of yourself because there's always going to be someone in front of you being like, go fuck yourself. Like there's always someone bringing you back to earth.
When we were first starting and we were doing like kind of city satellite websites, mm-hmm. like before we all came together, it was Boston, Chicago, Philly, the Baltimore DMV area. And all of those cities were big enough to be like a popular spot, but small enough that those guys would like take over the city.
Yeah.
And I mean, no matter how popular I ever got here, there's, you know, there's Broadway who's never, that crew has never even fucking heard of Barstool Sports.
Right.
And there's the art crew over here that is so big that it's like, you can't like take over the city unless you are like, you know, Robert De Niro or something.
Right.
So like that always, it keeps you like humble, but it's also like, fuck this. It's this Sisyphus thing. Like, yeah, I'm rolling the ball up the hill every time. Like there's never a stop in New York.
Right.
There's always somebody bigger, better, faster, stronger, richer, prettier, funnier, whatever, you know?
Right. Right. But I think once you know that and you stop chasing that, that like before you know it, like maybe you don't conquer the whole city, but you're closer to that than you thought you were. Like, you see what I'm saying? Like, I think
forever. It's
yeah. You just got to stop keeping tabs of that shit. And I think you'll slowly realize, oh, like actually I am pretty popular. Like people do know who I am. And again, not that that's the point of doing what you're doing,
but it is like, I'm always like very self-deprecating and it's like probably to a fault where I should have kind of been like, no, people like do fuck with what I, with all my stuff. And like, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
And you don't have to always, you know, you got to enjoy it and recognize it a little bit. Cause
yeah.
if you don't, you know, you're not, you're never going to take that next step. If you don't believe that next step is going to be, you know, successful.
Of course. Yeah.
What is that next step for you? I mean, the song with Chelsea Cutler drops, the album was, I mean, I, that album to me, very rarely now do I put on an album like at all.
Yeah.
I, and actually this year, the two albums I did that with was Machine Gun Kelly's and yours. Those are the only two things in years. And I feel like I'm a very, I think a lot of music, a lot of people like my age listen to music the way I do. Where like, if you're a fan of like old school rap, a lot of the new shit does not really like resonate with you. And a lot, and like, I find myself just kind of gravitating towards like top 40 because I'm like, nothing else is really like grabbing me. And I feel like I know a lot of people that way who are kind of like lost in this like age range that I'm in. But I found those two albums and like to be able to listen to something like start to finish or like several songs in a row is such a like luxury now that I haven't enjoyed in a long time. And your album was one of them. So I feel like
thanks, man.
It's like you're there. I mean, right? Like, is it just like keep doing more of this or is there another, you know, do you have your idea, your eyes set on something beyond music and into different, you know, avenues of entertainment or what's next?
Yeah. Thanks. I thank you for saying that. That, I mean, that's a big compliment because you're right. Like nowadays, no one I feel like listens to albums and that's kind of a toxic like thing that I do is I think like when I'm making an album, sometimes the thought comes into my head that like, okay, like, yeah, I'm putting my heart and sweat into everything and I'm curating a story and all this shit. But like, is there going to be people who actually sit down and listen to all this? Or is it
just going to be the one single? And
Right. And sometimes that is what happens. But like, I think, again, what I was saying, like, as long as like, if I'm satisfied with it, that's all that matters. So, and like, I make albums because I love albums. I listened to albums growing up. Like, that's to me, like,
how we did it.
Yeah. Like, that's how I digested music was like, I sat down, I listened to a whole project. You listen to an artist kind of like spill their guts and you become a fan. And so, yeah, like I, but to answer your question, as far as like what's next, I think, you know, my next album is going to come out early next year. I'm kind of just trying to pump out music.
I mean, you're on your Taylor Swift grind right there, bro.
Yeah.
A matter of months really, right?
It is. Yeah. I wanted to do this actually early last year, but just, I think, the pandemic kind of screwed that up and whatever. But so I'm just kind of at the point where like we were, once that album dropped, we ended up making more music and back to AOK, like we made a whole album together and it's a follow-up to like our first project we did. So it's gonna be cool to show fans that. And yeah, man.
Did he do this entire album?
He did the entire album. Yeah. Him and a friend of mine, his name's Hazy Eyes. He produced Flare Guns, which Chelsea and I sing. And, yeah, we went out to Newport, Rhode Island. We made this next project and we made it at his parents' house in like their living room and like just kind of got out of LA and kind of went back to the basics of like why we started making music in the first place. So yeah, man, no, that's what's next. But as far as like other endeavors, like I'm trying to actually get into, it's going to sound like a joke, I'm trying to get in like the condiment scene. Like I love mustard. I'm trying to make my own mustard.
Let's go.
Yeah. So my nickname is Mustard Mike. Like I growing up, like that's all what my friends call me. And I even run like a little food blog on the side where I just kind of make fun of food.
You know what's so funny? Music is not even your passion, dude.
Not really. I mean, like,
it is fucking mustard. No, your real passion, the shit that, because right now, yes, you love music, but like, that's your job now. That's what's paying the bills. And that's where you have snake fucking lawyers and publicists and A&R and labels. What you love is like, I want to test out this mustard and go blog about it. Because you're doing that for the fucking love of the game.
Right. I'm telling you, man. Yeah. No, like, that's, and like, that's what, like, when I do that shit, it like cracks me up. Like I'm like a 28-year-old man and I like laugh out loud. I'm like typing out mustard reviews, but like,
yes,
it makes me feel like a kid again, you know? So I'm seriously passionate about it. So like, I'm talking to some people. I'm trying to get that off the ground. We'll see. But like, again, it's just something that like,
why not though? That's what's crazy. Like this, like the way the world is now, it's like,
it's just like the Wild West. Like doesn't really matter. Like you just go for it.
I mean, I'm seeing it right now a little bit. Like I've been a blogger and a podcaster for like my whole life, my whole career. And now I'm doing these like short form Instagram videos.
Yeah.
And people are recognizing me for that. and have no idea that I did this other shit. My boss, Portway.
The 1 minute man stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And people are like, oh, you're the 1 minute man. I'm like, wow, I actually, you know, I'm flattered and that's awesome. But there's like 10 years of shit that I did, you know, and those are similar. So it's not that crazy. But like Portnoy is like, he had a 20 year run as a blogger and a creator. And now he's just like the pizza guy. Like, you know, one day you might be retiring off of mustard money and it's like, oh yeah, but I also do music, you know, like
that is crazy for sure. Like those examples, you're right.
Cause it's possible.
It's Who knows, man? I mean, I wouldn't be mad at that. Like I could be talking to you in 10 years from now. I'll be fucking loaded with a yellow suit on, rocking mustard.
You know what I've been doing all week? I've been eating bagels with mustard.
Are you put like lunch meat on it or just bagels and mustard?
Straight mustard, dude.
Really? Really?
I mean, it's to me, it's like a soft pretzel.
I could see that. I could see that.
So I've just been hammering them. And there's a couple people here who like it. Most people are like, that's so gross. I'm like, give it a try, dude. And I mean, if I had a mustard Mike, like flight of mustards to pick from and try. Dude,
say less. I'm going to send you some stuff and hopefully we can do something with Barstool. I would love that, man.
I'm not even kidding. Like, hook it up, dude. Yeah, we could do some things.
Well, you guys, I mean, like Dave's pizza stuff's amazing, but yeah, I feel like you guys could get more. I don't know if there's other food things you guys do, but I mean, the pizza stuff clearly is a success.
That's the thing. Like, no, not yet. But, you know, we were a fucking – actually, what we ultimately are is a t-shirt company that does other stuff. I mean, you know, we ran a fucking EDM techno tour for 4 years. Like, that's not what we set out to do. We, you know, we're always just like, where's the money and what's next? So like,
you guys actually could, I don't know if you've thought about doing a festival, but that would probably be great.
Yeah. Dave used to do like, he would do like college weekend type shit. Stoolapalooza, he called it.
Okay. Back
to school. Yeah. He had guys like Posner was like the act one time, Sam Adams, like that, that level. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I think he got a good taste of the music industry though, when he started to get to deal with like the bullshit side of it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Fuck it. I'm not.
Yeah. I'm not surprised. It's
grimy.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's fucking. Do you kind of identify with like, I think it's probably a race thing. I feel like a lot of times you just get lumped together with other white guys who are of the same age. But I feel like to me, it's like it ranges from like Sam Adams several years ago to like Time Flies. And now you Black Bear and, you know, Posner was in there. G-Eazy, I guess, to an extent. Like, do you guys, is there something there, or is it just like we're all just saying that because you're like white college guys who are like
I mean, yeah, I guess both, yes to both those. I like there's validity to, I guess, all that. Yeah, it's a race thing for sure. Like you're right, like back in the day, I don't know if you're familiar with like Good Music All Day and like this song is sick, when the blogs were a thing, like that to me is like the golden age of like of white person music.
Yes. that's blogs were allowed to share like download links and all that shit.
Right.
Like I know it probably sucks for like an artist with your, you know, hurting your wallet, but to get on and to get popular and to get your music out there, I mean, that was amazing for a music fan.
100%. I mean, like that's all I would check. That was kind of like the Billboard charts for like kids my age back then. Like Spotify wasn't a thing. So like, as long as you got like a review on Good Music All Day or this song is sick, like that was, you were like hitting the pinnacle. So, but yeah, I mean, like to what you're asking, it's a race thing. And I think for me, I've always tried to take it with like, take it as a compliment, like to be recognized in general is great. So I try not to get too mad about the whole white frat rap college thing. And that's gonna obviously come with it, but like I think the more I dove into like my artistry and I sang more, I think I'm getting to a point where I'm branching out of that bucket.
Because like I don't know if I would really call you a rapper. Like,
no,
what do you say you are? What, like you just I make music, like because you
like
rap, singing, a little bit of reggae, a little bit of like, you know.
It's all over the place. I would just say artist, honestly. Like I would say singer more than anything, but again, I'm not too attached to any type of label. I just kind of like, I'll just do whatever feels right. Yeah. But it's funny, you mentioned Time Flies. I think you're friends with Cal, right? Cause Cal's a good buddy of mine. Yeah.
Yeah. When he starts freestyling, I'm like, this is actually literally the most impressive thing I've ever seen.
It's- well, here's the thing. Like, I'm gonna give Cal some compliments, but like, Cal is like an incredible singer. I think people overlook that because his most viral stuff is his freestyling.
But he's got a voice on him too, man.
Right, right. But like, yeah, but like, so he's a great rapper, but he also can sing like an angel. So like, it's funny that, I mean, I don't think I'm nearly as good as a rapper as Cal, but you know, it's kind of nice to kind of have a secret weapon, so to speak.
Yeah.
Be able
I'm
to
like,
rap.
I hear you guys. I'm like, Drake who? Like, voice on? Like, it's the same shit. Let's go. There's something about when you can just do your own hook, but then also drop a verse and it's like,
yeah,
good. You know, wordplay and punchlines and good rap. It's like
Drake can for sure do that, though. Let's not discredit Drake.
Yeah, yeah.
Way better than
no
I
shade,
can.
No shade, but yeah. I'll let you go in a minute here, but I'm always interested. You mentioned you're married happily, so I'm always fascinated by, like, when you make a song about a girl from high school, when you make a song about girls who are on your dick because you're a rapper, whatever it may be.
My wife's waving me right now.
Is there any
talking about my ex high school girlfriend? I got headphones on. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, maybe we'll skip this topic right now. We'll do next time.
No, do it. Do it.
is there ever? I always think of the ultimate to me is like when Kanye's rapping and I see Kim in the fucking stands and it's like, yeah. You know, is there ever any because for me as a blogger, there used to be like, I'd press publish on a blog or I'd make a joke on a podcast and I'd be like, I'm gonna be in the doghouse tonight. My wife, yeah. My girlfriend's gonna be pissed.
Yeah, yeah.
But I feel like music kind of gets a little more of a, it's understood, but is that true?
It gets, I would agree. Yeah, I would say yes. It gets kind of this like artist pass. And not to say like what you're doing is an art, but like, I think someone hearing a song and like my wife, for example, like you said, like this is a conversation, mind you, that like I feel like I have with myself all the time. Cause like when I make something I know I love, I'm like, fuck, is she gonna like get mad if I put this out or is this okay? And I think I'm at the point with her now where, you know, we obviously trust each other. It's fine. But there are times where she's like, why would you mention like so and so? Or like,
yeah, still- so it does happen.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I don't want to hate, but it's like people don't like blogging and podcasting doesn't have the same level of respect as music where it's like, yeah, you were putting your heart into that. I was like, I was putting my heart into that too. Right. And that was like what made it funnier. That's what made it relatable, but it doesn't get the same respect.
I know.
But I'm almost happy to hear you singers are getting in the dog out too.
You guys get the short end of the stick. I apologize for that. Yeah. It's like a little cooler when I do it for some reason, but
yeah. Right. Well, it's, you know, it's like, there's a sex appeal to it. Part of the reason she likes you is that, then you got to take the good with the bad. But I, you know, it's like, oh, so yeah, like you fucked all those girls back when you were, touring. Oh, what?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's, I choose my battles. So I'm like, I'm never going to mention like sex or anything, but I will bring up like emotions and
love. You know, right.
That's even worse though. I found sometimes is like, she would almost rather hear about like a hookup than like you broke my heart. Cause she's like, I'm the only one person that can break your heart. Like, what are you talking about? Yeah. Yeah. So it's a
two-way street. You really are every man. You can make it as big as you can, but like, no, there's still something like that. Like every guy goes through that, right?
100%. It's no different. Trust me. It's no different at all. Yeah.
All right. I mean, this is only round one. I hope to talk to you many more times in the future because I feel like we could go for hours and days.
Yeah, dude.
So don't be a stranger. But I mean, I guess the latest is the new song with Chelsea Cutler that's out. The new album will be out early in the next year. But most importantly, what's the food blog?
Okay. Thank you for asking. It's called Mustard Mike's Restaurant. So if you go on Instagram, just at Mustard Mike's Restaurant. I mean, we got like 8,000 followers. It's not blown up, but
let's blow this shit up. Let's go.
I would love to, but the like you'll see, like I'm not taking it like seriously. So like and mind you, a lot of what you're seeing on there is like my wife's cooking and I'm just like, babe, let me just get a photo. And like, and then what the point of the page is to really like read the captions. That's like kind of where I'm shining as like a writer. So
for sure.
So go on. Yeah, check it out. Look, if anyone's watching this, you're interested, like go check it out. You know, if you don't fuck with it, whatever. I don't care.
No. But, we'll put it out there and people are going to fuck with it. The empire. This is where it started. All right.
You might have changed my life right now. So I appreciate it. Yeah.
All right, man. I thank you so much for the time. Best of luck with everything. And we'll talk soon. All right.
Thank you, man. Take care.